Welcome to the Shaping Portsmouth podcast. Shaping Portsmouth is a collaboration of key Portsmouth businesses, transforming Portsmouth together. Welcome to another Shaping Portsmouth podcast with me, CEO Dave Humphreys, and today I am joined by Editor-in-Chief of the South Region of the News, Mark Waldron. Welcome, Mark.
Good afternoon. How are you, Dave?
I'm very well. Yourself?
Yeah, very good. Thank you very much.
Good, good. I think we can safely assume that as you are Editor-in-Chief of the News, you have had a quite an esteemed career in journalism. But before we go into that, are you local? Are you from this area?
I am. So I'm from Cowplain.
Right.
Just over Portsdown Hill, just in the Havant Borough. So, yeah, my dad was in the civil service. The whole family came from Bath, but he was transferred down to the naval base. Just before I was born, so my mum stayed at home, gave birth, and then I was 3 months old when we moved down to Cowplain, and my mum still lives in the house I grew up in. So yeah, very much not, can't say I'm born and bred, but sort of grew up in the area. Went to school here, went to college here, and it was only when my career started picking up that I actually had to move away for the first time. So yeah, Portsmouth is certainly, I feel, is in my blood.
Brilliant. And so what inspired you to get into journalism in the first place?
So at school, had a love of English, really enjoyed reading when I was growing up, liked the power of words, liked books. So the old, went to the careers advisor at school and said, this is where my interests lie, any suggestions? I think they gave me two options, either a journalist or a librarian. So I went for journalism, looked into it, saw that you didn't have to necessarily go to university, which is still the case now, could go to college. Just so happened that Highbury College, as it was, ran one of the best pre-entry journalism courses in the country. So stayed on at school, did my exams, did my A-levels, and then went to Highbury and did a year's course there. So yeah, it's very much a decision I'd taken while at school, and still in it here today.
Yeah, so that one panned out all right.
Yeah, not bad, not bad. It took me a long time to get back to Portsmouth, but it was worth the journey.
So what did entry into the world of journalism look like for you back in the day? Did it start off at a job with the Portsmouth News?
Or? No, so I did work experience at the News. I even went for an interview at the News, but wasn't successful. So, as I say, I could have probably just stepped straight out of Highbury into the News Centre in Hillsey, but no, it took me away. So, started off, my first job was working for the Aldershot News and Mail Group. So just up the road, started off in the Aldershot office, then covered Farnborough, and then became a chief reporter in Fleet. So not far away. And my thoughts were always, well, you know, you start off in local newspapers and then you go on to national newspapers or TV, or we sort of go into grander things. But the more I moved around in local newspapers, the more I realised that actually I loved being part of regional publishing.
Yeah.
Because you are part of local communities, you can make a difference. You're not just doing the national stories that everyone else is doing. You're getting involved in local affairs, local people telling their stories. Absolutely loved it, and so never really moved out of regional papers. So I had a couple of other jobs. I spent a couple of years in Hull, spent 10 years in Cardiff, where I sort of made the switch from being a reporter into management. Got my first job as editor in Swindon on the Swindon Advertiser, and then from there was looking at, well, where do I go next? And it was, well, the dream would be bigger paper, go back home, edit the News in Portsmouth, and right time, right place, the job came up, and I came back here in 2007, and I've been editor and editor-in-chief since then, and absolutely loved every minute of it. It's so special coming back. I mean, being the editor of any title is special, but being one of your hometown paper where actually the city means something to you and you know the history of it, it just, yeah, just makes it that more, much more enjoyable.
So, and I suppose this is probably the same in any sector of work, but the difference between the kind of doing role and the management role, how different is being an editor to actually being a journalist and being involved in it?
Yeah, it took me away for many years from why I entered the career, which was writing, going out, covering stories, yeah, meeting people, because that's why you go into journalism. So you find yourself, to start off with, as news editor, you're directing teams, so you're still very much hands-on day-to-day of what's going on, but you're not going out and actually doing the reporting, but you're very close to things that are happening. But then as you move further up, assistant editor, deputy editor, acting editor, editor, you spend a lot of time looking at spreadsheets. You're not just inside of the editorial, you're looking at the commercial side, you're looking at revenues, you're looking at HR, you're looking at everything else that comes with running a business in a way. So I spent a long time learning that side of things and crafting that, which, as I say, just takes you from away from the front line. But what I've tried to do more and more over the last few years is still to try and get out as much as possible. I try to go to as many events I get invited to, because that's where the fun is, just staying in touch with people. I write a lot more than I have done for a number of years, and I really enjoy being sort of back into the community and writing about what's happening locally as well.
And you mentioned earlier on sort of the realisation that community and local newspaper is kind of the place to be, as opposed to the national. Is there a bit of a conflict sometimes in that kind of local journalism area, that whereas the national papers are clearly out to sensationalise, they're looking for the story, whereas when you look at working locally, you've got to deal with this balance between trying to champion the place you are, but also accurately reporting what's happening, which sometimes might be a bit detrimental to the local area.
Yeah, absolutely spot on. Absolutely spot on, Dave. It's a conflict that does hang around. Luckily, you can choose how often you want that conflict to come in. And when I came in as editor, I was quite surprised by, so when I went to meet a lot of people, that the news wasn't necessarily seen as a force for good for the local community. Because we were probably focusing a lot on, you know, holding people to account and questioning things and poking people. But I think there's a balance to be had there. And I'd certainly set out to have a more positive agenda and to champion the city and to champion everything within the city and tell people, look, our front foot is that we're not going to come looking for trouble. We're going to be here to shout about how brilliant the city is and the people are in it. But, you know, crime happens. We have to report that. People do things and go to court. We have to report that. Things go wrong. We report that. Things shut down. We have to report that, because that's part of our job. But I think if you tell people that, you know, you are generally positive about the city and you will support things, but there will be times when we'll have a difference of opinion with either the football club or the city council or a public body. But as long as people understand that, you know, that's not personal. We're doing our job. Other people are doing our job. We're not always going to see eye to eye. And providing we can deal with that professionally and then move on, and next time, you know, we can be friends again. I think I'm hoping that most people accept that and just say, okay, we saw the stance you took on that. We wouldn't necessarily agree with it, but we see why you've done it. You know, it's fair, it's accurate, it's your opinion. Okay, let's move on. But so, yeah, you'll get those conflicts. I think one of the main things is just the ability to pick up the phone to people and say, look, this has come up, we're going to have to cover that. You know, we're going to have to cover that, but, you know, we just want you to know that we're doing it, and you know, make sure that you've got your side of the story and we've got everything factually correct, and then we can move on from there. So it comes up, probably not as much as it might have done maybe 20-30 years ago, but yeah, it's always you've always got to get that balance right. But I think people should see that on the whole, we are here for the positive benefits of the city and for bringing people together.
Yeah, sure. And of course, 20 or 30 years ago, I remember dealing with crime reporters at the news back in the day.
Indeed.
In a previous life. And obviously, you know, you built up relationships with journalists. Yep. And, you know, sometimes they could do you a favour and put appeals out. Sometimes they needed some information that we weren't ready to give out, but we could, you know, provide something on an embargo or whatever, and it worked well. But you know, back then, I remember the scale of the news centre and the amount of people that were working there, and, you know, the flood of papers coming out in the afternoon and out to all the different news agents. It's not how it is anymore, is it?
It's not. No. And, you know, partly for good reasons and bad reasons, but you're right. I mean, if you look around, probably most professional comms teams now probably have more people working in them than we've got in our newsroom.
Yeah.
And also a lot of these people probably have come from local newsrooms, so they know what they're doing. So yeah, that's changed a lot. That puts pressure on us as regards what we can cover, what we can't cover. That whole, what you touched on, Dave, of trust, that is still integral to everything we do. And without trust, we're sunk. And you know, you have that trust through building up relationships over a long period of time where, okay, you help me, I'll help you. Okay, I didn't get stitched up. Okay, we'll keep on with that relationship moving forward. So that remains central to everything we do. But yeah, it's a different world now. Everyone's online. You don't have to wait for the newspaper to arrive at the local news agent to find out what's happening. You just pick up your phone and check it, and you've got your news alerts on there. So, but we've moved the audience online. We still have a large chunk of people across the city who thankfully still read the newspaper, but that's a smaller and smaller number, and that's going to continue the case. But I think we've adapted editorially very well of making sure that if people want to catch up on the headlines on the website, on social feeds, on through video, through words, through pictures, we need to be providing the news in the format that they most easily want to digest it.
Yeah, and I must admit, I used to like picking up the paper in the afternoon and having a read through, and I found the online kind of the way it works, especially on the social media feeds where stories are all separate, quite difficult. Yeah. And then you get all the adverts that appear in there as well, which is obviously how revenue needs to be generated. Recently, though, I discovered the app and I can read the paper in the same format on the app without all of those adverts and all of the clutter. Having signed up on I got a very good deal on Black Monday or whatever, Black Friday and that's made it quite a lot more accessible again for me. Is there, or how difficult is it transitioning a print-based publication into the digital world and getting it right and being able to package it up in a way online that still delivers what consumers want?
Yeah, that has been, and it still remains a bit of an issue for us as how we drive that to get the balance right between what's a good user experience and, as you said, Dave, making money out of it is always going to be a struggle for us. And you know, people were happy to pick up a copy of the paper and pay money for it. And then turn pages where you got four-page adverts and you had to turn over because there's another four-page advert. And in print, people accepted that. But online, because everything was free, first of all, when we started introducing subscriptions and premium content, that was a bit of a clash where they think, well, you have been paying for this previously. And you know, the fact that we need to serve a lot of adverts to make that money out of it, because we're not getting the cover price that we get from the newspaper, that is always going to be, well, not necessarily always, but at the moment still remains a bit of a clash point for us that we need to continue to work through. But to your very kind advert there, you know, if you want the best of both worlds, if you pay for a full-time subscription, you can get the paper, you can get the app, which has a replication of the newspaper, so you can read it in page format and you can read it as a digital format. And I think it's just, you know, it's just how people are used to getting their news these days, and a lot of younger people will just be getting it through their feeds, so they're used to that. I still like picking up a book, picking up a magazine, picking up a paper and reading through it in an orderly fashion, but we know that a lot of our readers don't digest their news in that way, and that's why we have to be where they are. But we'll continue to learn from what people tell us, and we'll continue to have to serve how people want their news moving forward. And we're in a constant change in the industry at the moment where you're constantly looking at how do we adapt, how do we reach the right people at the right times.
And the other, I suppose, is it a danger? The other issue you face is that once upon a time people relied on journalism to get their news, but nowadays people through social media have a lot more power to deliver their news themselves. You know, if I want to put a Shaping Portsmouth story out, would my first port of call be the Portsmouth News, or would it be our LinkedIn feed?
Yeah.
You know, and I suppose that adds some challenges, but perhaps also some opportunities in that you can find stories in those locations.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Again, every way the world changes, it's challenges and opportunities. And I think you can never take away from the fact that newspapers, media of all sorts, were gatekeepers of information, whereby if you wanted to tell somebody something, you had to come to people like us, and at some point we'd have to make a decision whether we run that. Now you don't have to, and that democratic process and giving everybody the right, I'll never speak against that. That's the good thing. Unfortunately, with that comes that a lot of people get a voice who shouldn't have a voice, so we have to wade through that as well, and that's not just Portsmouth, that's just the world over. But for us, it just means as well that we have to be more creative in the stories that we write and the stories that we find. So it's not worth us doing a lot of stories about events that other people have already published, because people have already read that. So for us, actually, it keeps us on our toes that rather than repurposing press releases, we have to go out and find exclusive good content that nobody else has got and people want to read about, and go out and experience things. And I think that's the big thing of places like Portsmouth and the news, is that we need our reporters out there covering things, being at events, talking to people, because that's what you can't replicate through necessarily sort of press releases or AI, which is another big challenge at the moment as well. So it just keeps us, I think, honest as well, to make sure that we're covering the stories that no one else is going to cover, and we're delivering that to people. So we build on what the community is putting out there through their own sources as well. So I'd hope that gives a wider spread of news and information sharing across the city.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose in a city centenary year, I've probably got a little bit of a focus on businesses that might have been around for a similar amount of time or longer. And I know, mainly from some of the times you've spoken about the headlines on Centenary Day in the Portsmouth News, that you must have been around. Not you personally, prior to the centenary. So how old is the news?
So April 1877 was when we published our first edition. By the time the city centenary came around, we were just shy of our 50th birthday. So we've been around longer than the city's had that status, and it's been a privilege of the news to be able to cover the momentous occasions of what's happening in the city through 100 plus years now. And it's very much a tradition that we take great pride in, and still try to, and still do deliver to this very day. So yeah, we've been around a long, long time.
And some quite iconic moments in that time for the city as well. But I think one of the things that amused me most was the sheer lack of coverage on the city getting its city status. It was a little side mention.
Yeah. So I made sure the end of last year that we've got all our bound volumes of all our previous papers that are in storage. So I got out the four collections that mark the whole of 1926. I was flicking through the pages of the papers trying to find out where the big announcement was going to be on this momentous occasion. And you're right, it was buried on page 5. It was about 6 paragraphs long. And that was it. It was just, we'd just like to confirm that, the city's had their letters patent delivered, and we are now a city. Different world in those days. As I said in an article we did last week, we got very excited this year. The first two editions of this year's papers were all about the centenary. And yet 100 years ago, it wasn't necessarily seen as that big a deal.
No. But I suppose it raises the question in terms of that, I suppose that as the curators of the city's history, how do you look after all of that old archived stuff? Is it all digitised, or is it really all just bound volumes of editions in storage?
I wish it was digitised, and I've had the dream to digitise it for the last 10 or so years. But that's a big cost and a big amount of resource. Yeah. But I do, we sit on a vast archive, and if you look at our pictures, I was involved when we moved out of the news centre to Lakeside. First of all, I made sure that we kept everything and boxed up everything and took everything away from the news centre, because I know that lots of other smaller titles across the country when they've moved office, that's all just ended up in a skip somewhere. So I fought hard to make sure that we kept it, installed it. And, you know, our picture archive, we have everything from CDs to negatives to hard copies, right back to glass plates of pictures from the end of the 19th century. And that's all in carefully being looked after in boxes. But I would love to be able to digitize all that and almost make that the, you know, the people's pictures where everybody across the city can have access to it and find the pictures and bring them on to bring them out from their sort of dusty envelopes that they're in at the moment, because it is a waste. It's a cost to us at the moment rather than a resource that we can use. I'd love to be able to one day find out a means of having digitizing all those records they can be available. And it'd just be fascinating for us, because there's so many pictures that probably not seen the light of day since they first appeared. It would be brilliant to have an opportunity to share those with the readers again.
Yeah, I can remember doing a policing event years ago in Waterlooville Precinct, and I think it was Malcolm was the photographer.
Probably.
And took a picture of the event and then said, can I just get a headshot of you? And I was thinking, why on earth do you want this? And he took the headshot, and I didn't think anything of it. And then over time, various things happened that involved me, and that picture started reappearing all the time the picture linked to the story, which I found quite amusing.
I'll have to try and find that then.
I've got a copy of it. Yeah. So... but it is there.
But there'd be thousands and thousands of pictures like that. That would be just so good to, as I said, try and resurface again for everybody's benefit.
Definitely. And of course, back in the days of the news centre, alongside the journalism side of things, you've got a massive print operation. Mm-hmm. What happened to that when you moved out of the news centre? How did you managed to continue with the printing?
So it's because everything's remote now and you it's sent electronically. You don't have to be based in the same place where your print centre is. I think the most exciting thing about the new centre, and probably for anybody who had a visit, was going down and seeing the presses roll. And it sounds like a cliche, but being there in the centre when they hit the start button to start edition rolling up, and you're seeing all the papers going around, and then you get the first ones off the press, and you can literally stop the press if you want to. You can never beat that experience. But in the end, we decommissioned the print plant itself. I think that got sold off to a different group somewhere, and we ended up printing elsewhere in the country. But when that opened, which I think must have been late 90s. That was a real state-of-the-art printing press at that time, the company invested a lot of money in that. So when we came to move out, it was still relatively new in terms of printing presses.
And so I'm guessing you're still printing relatively locally to get editions into the shops in time.
Yeah, we just print down the south coast now. I mean, we had a time where we were using some of the national sites in London. We use south coast printing presses now. And you're right, just to ensure that we can have as late a deadline as possible and get papers back here in time for the shops.
Yeah, lots of different elements to think about.
Indeed, lots of change.
So now you mentioned right at the start that I suppose the perks of being editor is some of the events and things you get to go to and take part in. And I will confess I probably see you at many of those events anyway.
Possibly.
One of the big ones is one that you actually get to run, which is the Business Excellence Awards, which the news runs every year. Mm-hmm. Why is that important?
Because, as I touched on earlier, is that it's important that two things. One, we're positive about the communities we serve, and two, we get involved in them. And you can't do that in a probably bigger way than running an award ceremony that you arrange, you put together and you put on as a show of respect and admiration for the businesses in our community. But also take that a stage forward, and rather than reporting about these businesses, actually hand out awards at the end of the day. So it's important that we not only recognise our best businesses, that we celebrate them. And the best way of doing that is by having that annual award ceremony. And it's something I inherited when I came here. We had a number of award ceremonies, including lots of community ones that have gone by the by recently. But that business one has always stayed central to what we do. And it's just, a great opportunity for us to take that one step forward and saying, look, we cover your stories, report on what you do, but now we're going to actually celebrate it.
And it's a great evening. The great and the good of Portsmouth all gathering in the Guildhall to celebrate the best of our business community. I was obviously very interested when you asked me to be on the judging panel to see how it actually all works behind the scenes. And I suppose you have a perception that people have a look at it and say, oh yeah, we'll you know, give it to them. They're good. Yeah. And it's quite straightforward. But it's transpires, it's not that easy to judge at all.
It's not.
And especially with the sheer amount of nominations that you get.
Yeah.
So, how do you approach sifting that down to winners?
With a great help from the judging panel. You couldn't do it by yourself. And it's a lot of hard work, but it's enjoyable as well. And particularly this year, as you touched on, we had a record amount of entries again. So we had more than that. I think in the end, we had to even shortlist the shortlist, which is not something we have to do every year. But there were some categories that there were just so many in there that you couldn't necessarily say, right, we're going to put 48 businesses forward on this shortlist. We had to go through the process to actually get to the shortlist. And you just have to go through each story and look out of why that company's had a particularly good year. I think that's part of the focus. It is supposed to be for the previous year. A lot of companies will have had success upon success, and okay, so it's a gradual process. But is there anything in particular in the last year that's taken them forward? Is it the way they've grown new markets? Is it just the numbers game? Is it the way they look after their staff? Have they acquired things? Have they done something different? Have they innovated? So you look for various touch points, but it's always difficult because it's not like for like. In any category, you're comparing businesses in completely different sectors doing completely different things. So I think you just look for those fixed points of, what's the story that's coming out of this? What's the success built on? Is there anything particularly they have done differently to really drive themselves forward? And then you get, whether it's 5, 6, 7 people in a virtual room. And we've sat through those things before, Dave, and I say, well, it's A and you'll say it's B. And you say, well, there's no way there's that. It's definitely this one. And people have different views. But I think that then as a panel, you talk around it and you talk, this is the reasons why I think this. And then someone says, well, yeah, but I looked at this. And you think, okay, yeah, that's a good point. I didn't necessarily consider that. And hopefully as a judging panel, you come together with at the end of the day, who you think are the winners. And some categories you go through and there are standouts. Others, as we found this year, we talked around for a long time and then had a sort of vote and then had another vote and then it still didn't come out and then we changed things around a bit. And some were so close to call, it was really impossible. But at the end of the day, that as a panel, we're there to stay there until we've got all the winners. And it can be very tough.
Mm. And as we learnt last year, if there's two choices, you and I will always go in opposite directions.
I think that's the
way it worked. But I must admit, I'm not able to do the panel this year, so I submitted all of my views in writing, and then obviously looked at the outcomes afterwards. Yeah. And there were a couple of categories where I just looked at it and thought, really, my one didn't win, and others where the person I'd suggested did, and I was quite happy that everyone had agreed. But I mean, it's not cut and dry by any means, is it?
I know the votes that you sent through for each category were taken into account, and there was in fact one category where it looked like someone else was going to win. And then it was like, oh no, what did Dave say? And that brought another company back into it. And you're right, because I go through it and I score mine and I've got my particular favourites. And then we get into the room and it's like, oh no, but I want my one to win. I might be editor-in-chief of the paper, but my view counts no higher than anyone else on that judging panel. And that's the beauty of it. So there might be ones that I like, but if everyone else in the room says, no, it's this one, I have to go along with it.
Mm. The without giving away too many behind the scenes secrets, actually the one I always liked was last year, and we were discussing the overall winner, and we were getting very bogged down in a number of the big companies that had been nominated for multiple awards, and how we decided between them, and then the suggestion, that we were probably not focusing on SLR because they were only qualified for one category. Yeah. And that one comment in an instant changed the whole direction of where it went, and they ended up getting the overall award.
Yeah. So, and I said earlier about the tough thing about the individual categories is that you're not comparing light for light. But when you come to the overall, and you're comparing an employee of the year against a sustainable business of the year against a startup of the year, you're throwing in so many different dynamics again. Mm-hmm. So that's always an interesting one to see what comes out at the end.
And of course, this year, the overall winner was Southsea Food Festival. Mm. So a very different... what category? They came from the event of the year, maybe?
Yeah.
Probably? Possibly.
Yeah, I should know these things.
They weren't the community business. No, that was Perry Network. Yeah, so it must have been the event of the year.
Yeah.
Getting the overall.
Yeah. And some people might think that's a bit left field. We're saying, is it a business as people see businesses? But when we went through the judging process, it was just the balance between what they do to bring together lots of small businesses and supporting them. And a lot of businesses that have started off as a market stall, maybe at that, and then have gone on to a pop-up and then gone on to something else. But also what they do at a local level based on also the people from outside the city they bring in. So it was those two sort of sides that you just think, actually, this is a very powerful force within the city. And I think that's what really got them... at the end of the day.
Yeah, and it kind of goes back to your earlier point in that there are so many different things that you can judge the success of a business one on. And I think what jumped out for me on theirs was just the economic impact they have on the city as a whole is enormous.
Yeah.
So how can you not compare them to some of those bigger businesses in the same way?
Yeah.
But of course, this year, a couple of other interesting ones. I mean, I'd be remiss of me not to mention our own sponsored award,
Indeed.
The Inclusive Employer, which was nice to add in and recognise some of those businesses that go the extra mile by creating opportunities for people that they don't necessarily need to. But also, what I probably didn't expect in the nominations, which I probably should have anticipated when we asked to introduce that, was actually just the focus in on how inclusive a city Portsmouth is and some of those other things like the people championing Pride and other organisations. But a couple of other interesting ones there. The other new one being the once only award, because you won't be able to do a centenary award next year.
No, we might do the bicentenary in 100 years' time.
Yeah, I don't know that we'll be on the panel for that one.
Yeah, it might be a struggle.
But that one went to Airbus.
Yeah.
And what were you looking for in that centenary award?
It was something that summed up business in Portsmouth and the surrounding area from the last 100 years. So it didn't necessarily have to be a company that had been around for all that time. But really, if you thought about the development of the city since 1926, were there businesses that you would think about? Actually, they were quite iconic businesses or very much wedded to the city or in the development of the city, had a story to tell that interwove with probably the last 10 decades of the growth of the city. So quite a wide-ranging brief for the entries, and we did have a wide range of entries into it. But I think you know, it came down. So there's things like some quite, you know, iconic places. So Queen's Hotel, absolutely superb. Been out on that seafront for about as long as we've been around. Clarence Pier was there as well, and that visually they're very much representative if people think about the city. Spinnaker Towers in there, which is obviously the icon of the city at the moment, but only from the last 20 years or so. But you know, the city has really grown and developed on a strong engineering manufacturing base sort of around defence, and obviously the dockyard. And I think the Airbus for us having that gritty manufacturing base, but now very high tech space defence, and having been on that Broad Oak site for 70 years now, I think that really did for us as judges really sort of summed up, actually this is what Portsmouth is about, a city that's based in a very strong manufacturing past, but it's got a very dynamic future and it's got lots of exciting sectors. And I think that journey that Airbus has been on is almost like the city, the journey the city's been on as well, I think.
Definitely. It was one of those categories where I think if everyone had submitted their favourite, their winner in writing, we could have all possibly done a completely different one as well for different reasons.
Absolutely.
Really, really tricky one. But I think what jumped out at me with Airbus was a little fact that I picked up from, I think it was Sam in his acceptance speech on the night, and I think it was something like 72% of all of the satellites orbiting the Earth have a component made in Portsmouth, which is phenomenal when you think about it.
Phenomenal, and it's phenomenal when you see the map. When they I've seen a map of the globe with, and then they put on how many satellites are out there. And it's frightening how many bits of hardware are circling around us every minute of the day.
Yeah.
And when you think of a lot of those have got a Portsmouth part in them.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah,
and definitely.
You know, because of the work they're in and because where they are, I think, you know, they're not a highly visible part of this system. Mm. I think sometimes they might be overlooked. They're a bit of a hidden gem. And I think that sector and what they do, you know, needs to be shouted out and protected as much as possible.
Yeah. And then, of course, the other really interesting one on the night was the Outstanding Achievement Award, and Patricia Shufflebottom and the story behind that with Clarence Pier. So what made you decide to give that to her?
So that's always a hard one, because we used to do it as like lifetime achievement, and then you think, well, if you give that to someone, that's almost like we're saying, right, that's it, that's the end of your business career now. So we changed it to sort of special achievement. And it really just came out of the voting process for the 100th birthday award, that the story was in there from Clarence Pier, which again was a very strong story to really interweave into the history of this city. But the fact that and I know that sort of the Norman family as having run it for a while, but I hadn't realised that Patricia had been there as Billy Manning's daughter. She'd started working in there as a teenager, and I think it's her daughter Jill who then took over later on. But she'd been with Clarence Pier right from almost the start when it transformed itself into a leisure centre. She still sits on the board in her 90s now. So she'd gone through practically, you know, the vast majority of those 100 years being part of Clarence Pier. And we talked about the changes in the newspaper industry. I mean, the way Clarence Pier has had to continue adapt and evolve and change with the times, and there was part of it that, again, from my memories, is that, you know, a lot of us in the city will have either got their first sort of Saturday job there, or taken their girlfriend there on their first date, or remember the rides, or remember the nights out, or going there with their families or anything. I think the story of Clarence Pier probably is in a lot of families across the city, and I think the fact that Patricia had been there for all those years, seeing those changes, and was still hands-on now, it was just an incredible story to tell. It's like, well, they haven't won the Centenary Award, but, you know, she should certainly pick up something. And it was a great moment. I felt, you know, we'd been warned that, you know, she might not necessarily be able to get on the stage, so we came down to deliver the award on the stage with the family around her, and that was a special moment. And then when we asked all the winners to come up on stage, no, she was up out of a chair, and she came and joined us, so she was very much part of that evening entertainment. I think just really summed up the night, really, which was a very special night.
Yeah, yeah. And I suppose when it came down to it, the question was more how could you not give it to her than anything else. Yeah. So, very, very interesting. And I guess for anyone listening who's thinking of putting themselves in, or somebody else even, for an award, and I think Sarah and Tatum at the Shaping Awards actually spoke about the impact that winning the awards had on them, and encouraged people to put themselves or others in for the awards. So a good bit of advice there. But I think the thing for anyone listening that might have come out here is a few little tips in there on maybe what to include in your nominations and how to approach it.
Absolutely.
Because I think the saddening thing you see on the judging side of it is that business that on the face of it should be a strong contender and have just written a really small paragraph assuming that they have the right to win, going up against some people that do put a lot more effort in telling the story, in giving you the both the quantitative and the qualitative side of it, the emotional bit and the performance piece, and linking it back to what they've done this year and how they've achieved things and why they should be the winner. And sometimes the craft of the nomination actually means that the award has to go to someone who might not have been the obvious winner.
Yeah, and I think you have to be very careful not to be sort of think, right, this is the winner because there's a very highly stylized PR submission. But so you don't need to go to that length. But telling your story, what is the story of your success, and breaking that down into the real success elements and the numbers elements, but the human elements and what it means and what changes you've done and what challenges you faced. I think just almost like telling that story to the judging panel, that's what you need to do. And you're right, if you think that, well, everyone knows us, here's two paragraphs, now give us the award, you need to convince the judging panel. And I think so putting a lot of thought into those submissions, certainly a good bit of advice.
Now I suppose it'd be very remiss of me to do a Shaping Portsmouth podcast with you and not actually talk about Shaping Portsmouth, because you are in fact co-chair.
I am indeed.
So how did you wind up in that role?
The opportunity came up. So I saw it was advertised, and for everything I've said about why I love local journalism, you can just cut and paste that into Shaping. Shaping is all about celebrating the success of the city. It's all about making a difference. It's all about bringing people together. It's all about making sure that those connections are there. So what I was doing in my day job for the news very much was replicated in what Shaping exists for. As I hope to come across, we do a lot of support for local businesses in any way we can do. So adding that on to what I could bring into the Shaping role made me very interested in going for it. And I just absolutely love being part of Shaping, and certainly seeing the journey that we continue to be on under your leadership, Dave, and a brilliant team and a fantastic board who given a lot of their time and thoughts for free. I always say, sounds a bit cliche, it's like a family, but I think we are. I think we work so closely together, and all with the same aim of saying, what can we possibly do to make this city the best it possibly can be?
It's very definitely an interesting organisation in terms of the unique way it is set up as a collaboration of businesses, not something that's been forced to be created, not like a business improvement district or anything like that, but a genuine collaboration of businesses that just want to do social good in the city.
Yeah.
I've not found another one yet like that.
But you're right, and I talk about the internal Shaping family, but it's all our partners and our patrons who see the value in what we do and want to be part of it, because one, it's a good thing to be part of, but because they also feel they're part of something bigger and they want to help that something bigger, whether it's investment in time, investment in cash, investment of knowledge, whatever it is. There's so many businesses here who think, right, we're very successful in our own right, but we want to make sure the city as a whole benefits from that as well. And I hope people who go to the business awards as well, feel that same thing in the room. Everybody goes in that they want to win, but if they don't win, you get a lot of people who just think, okay, we didn't win, but you know, that's a, they're great, and this is the awards is all about celebrating Portsmouth. I think you get that's what you get through Shaping, is that all companies come together, not only for their own personal benefit and the benefit of their business, but what they can do to spread that across a wider part of the city, and it's a lovely thing to be a part of.
Definitely, and I'd really agree in terms of the feeling you get on that night at the business awards. It is that big sense of community. Yeah. Everyone's there to champion each other, and people. Yeah, I'm sure there are people that are disappointed they haven't won, but they tend to want to celebrate the people that have more and are pleased for others. And it is a great night, and it does sit up alongside our ethos at Shaping really, really well.
Yeah.
It does work. So we always like to round off our podcast with a little reflection on the city and ask our guest on a tip on somewhere to go, something to do. So what would be your Portsmouth tip?
Oh, how much longer have we got?
Not long at all.
No, not long at all, no. Yeah, so you've got all the obvious ones that people can go to. I think something which I love about our city, which a lot of people might or might not necessarily get the most benefit of, I think is the cathedral. Mm. I'm lucky to get invited to events there, and a couple I've been to this year, completely different. One was the official civic ceremony for the 100th birthday, but only a couple of weeks beforehand I've been to Portsmouth High School for Girls end of term music gala, where you know, a huge different range of musical performance were put on. But this, you go past, it's a wonderful, it's a beautiful building, but it's quite imposing. And I think people might feel that, you know, should they go in, can they go in? But you go inside the cathedral and the peace of the place and the stunning architecture inside, and you can just wander around it and just enjoy a moment of solitude amongst yourself. But I do think, you know, it's a place that maybe gets overlooked, and I would just recommend anybody who's down that way, spend some time. Just if the doors are open, go in and have a wander around. You've got guidebooks, you've got a lot of information boards that have just been put out now that tells the story of the cathedral. But it's very much, it's a part of our city, and it should be celebrated part of that. And I think the people of the city should make the most of it. They put on lots of events over the year as well, so I think there's ways that we can really make sure that and it's there. 100th birthday next year as well.
So
I think that would be my tip, is spend some time to go in there if you haven't been there recently, and just enjoy the magnitude of it.
It's a really interesting one, because it wasn't built as a cathedral. It, as you say, it became a cathedral 100 years ago. And there's an automatic assumption that because the city became a city, it therefore needed a cathedral, but there is no linkage between the two. The fact that they happened in consecutive years is just coincidence. And it was to do with the diocese getting too big, and they had to split the Winchester diocese, and it was either Portsmouth or Southampton, and it came to us.
Indeed.
So it is a very interesting one, because there's some, like any cathedral, I suppose, around the country, there are lots of quirky things in there, lots of stories, lots of different things to see. We recently did, and obviously with CP joining the team, CP Robinson, we did CP's weird tour of the cathedral one morning, where he took us around and showed us all the things that visitors don't normally get shown on the tours. Yeah. And there's some really interesting little bits there if you take the time to go around, look at and explore the place. So, and also we after I started, that was my first business leaders forum. The cathedral. And it is a very, very good conference center. So light and airy. But their tech setup was brilliant. Did a really, really good job hosting us. So definitely a good suggestion. Okay. Thank you for that one, Mark.
Thank you.
So that brings us to the end. Been really interesting chatting to you. Lots there with the news and the I suppose the iconic nature that has as an establishment within the city, and lots more going on. So I'm sure I will see you at loads more events throughout the year.
I hope so.
And thank you very much for talking to us.
Thank you. Pleasure. Thank you, Dave.
This podcast was brought to you by Shaping Portsmouth, working to make Portsmouth the number one UK city in which to invest, live, learn, work and visit. To find out more, please visit shapingportsmouth.co.uk. This podcast was supported by Spark Community Space and Portsmouth Community Lottery.